We estimate that sub-Saharan Africa's low-income countries will face an additional external financing need of about $245 billion over the next 5 years.
In this program, the latest outlook for sub-Saharan Africa.
And this number increases to $425 billion for the region as a whole. I am Papa Njai. I'm the head of the Regional Studies Division in the African Department of the International Monetary Fund.
And welcome to this IMF podcast. While there are signs of a recovery in some parts of the world, mostly in advanced economies, sub-Saharan Africa is still in the throes of this unprecedented health and economic crisis. The second wave of COVID-19 infections was worse than the first, and countries are bracing for more, while access to vaccines is scant at best. The latest regional economic outlook for sub-Saharan Africa lays out the challenges that the region is facing and comes up with some policy recommendations to deal with critical issues like debt management and the financing of vaccine procurement. Papa Njai leads the team that produces the biannual report, which is available online at imf.org. So is sub-Saharan Africa in a better place than it was in the fall?
Yes and no. Mm-hmm. And this answer applies both to the health situation and the economic situation. So let me first start with the health situation. You know, when you look at the official numbers on infection rates in sub-Saharan Africa, they are much lower than what you see in other regions. And there are various reasons for it, including, you know, the fact that the country, the authorities have implemented very early on some containment measures to limit the spread of the of this virus. But others have also made the argument that demographic factors may have played a role here as well, with the region having a younger population. But I think, you know, on this front, one needs to be a bit careful, because many countries are still contending with multiple waves of COVID-19. And these recent waves have been much more acute than the first one, you know, in the first half of 2020. So there's a need for some word of caution in here. On the economic front, the 2020 growth outturn was better than what we expected, but at minus 1.9% for the year as a whole, this was just the worst growth on record for the region. And in 2021, the region is expected to grow at 3.4%, and this will be the slowest growth in the world, essentially. So the crisis has had a large impact on the region, and there is a risk of the region being left behind going forward. We have, when you look at the per capita output and the evolution of per capita output going forward, the region is not expected to return to the 2019 level before 2022. And in 13 countries, and this is very important, in 13 countries that are home to 370 million people and represent 55% of GDP of the region, per capita incomes will not return to pre-crisis level before 2025. And this really tells you how large the impact has been of this crisis on the region. Mm.
Yeah, and as we see, economies recovering in other parts of the world, to what extent is this problem that Africa is having of gaining access to vaccines hampering the prospects of a recovery?
Yeah, first let me say that the global effort that was made to create, to develop an effective vaccine against the COVID-19 has really been exceptional. But then when we just look at what's been happening across countries, there is a risk of a broadening gap between countries. For example, you know, in some advanced economies, the authorities have secured enough vaccine to cover their own population multiple times. While when we look at in sub-Saharan Africa, several countries are still struggling to just vaccinate their essential frontline workers. And our expectation in the baseline scenario is that few will achieve the widespread availability of vaccine that needed by before 2023. And this is weighing on the recovery. And there are other factors as well that hold back the countries in the region, and we elaborate on them in the report. But the availability of vaccine and the deployment of vaccine is a key factor. Having a swift vaccination would help boost confidence, will help boost growth and reduce the need for emergency lifelines. And this will also mean that, you know, countries will have more policy space, room for maneuver on that front.
And can Africa manufacture its own vaccines? And do countries have the infrastructure required for the deployment of large-scale vaccination programs?
So today, there are a few facilities in the region that can produce vaccines. In general, you have, for example, in Senegal, the production of yellow fever vaccine. In South Africa, there is a firm that's currently involved in the production of the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine. And for the deployment of large-scale vaccination, you know, in the past, the region has also known a few successes, including in the large coverage of vaccination campaigns against diseases such as meningitis. So the know-how exists. What the issue is more how fast it can be done and the scale needed to tackle this present crisis. So most countries in sub-Saharan Africa rely on the COVID-19 vaccine global access, the COVAX facility, and the African Union to secure the doses that they need for their population. But extra efforts will be needed for the rapid rollout. And countries are working with the WHO, the World Health Organization, and the World Bank on their readiness and preparedness in terms of logistics, training staffs, outreach campaigns, etc.
Okay, and I mean, there is a problem with the COVAX in that there are not, countries are not seeing the quantity of vaccines that they need and faced with having to purchase them, I assume. But with debt levels as high as they are, where will African governments find the resources they need to, ultimately vaccinate their populations? And what will it mean for them and the global recovery, in fact, if they don't manage to do that?
In terms of policies, the priority, you know, still remains to stay save lives. And what this means is that, you know, more spending will be needed to strengthen the local health systems and containment efforts, as well as to cover the vaccine procurement and distribution. So policymakers will need to expand what's possible by creating more fiscal space through more domestic revenue mobilization, prioritizing essential spending, and better managing public debt. And as our managing director has said, vaccine policy is economic policy. And this means that for the international community, ensuring that vaccine coverage is adequate for sub-Saharan Africa is not just a local livelihood or local growth issue. It is a global issue. It's a global public good. So, and for every country, everywhere, the most durable recovery requires a global effort that covers everyone. A large share of the adult population, large enough so that, you know, some sort of immunity could be reached. So, you know, restrictions on the dissemination of vaccine or medical equipment should be avoided. And we call for multilateral facilities such as the COVAX facility to be fully funded, and that channels be put in place to ensure that the excess doses of vaccines in wealthy countries are redistributed quickly.
So, given how much divergence there is between what sub-Saharan Africa is experiencing right now as compared to advanced economies where, you know, recovery is well on its way, what kind of resources will the region need going forward to take care of this? And what role might the private sector play in that?
First, let me say that the development partners and the international community have helped cover a sizable portion of the region's need back in 2020. But our estimates or our projections indicate that more support will be needed, and this will be needed to boost spending on the pandemic response to maintain adequate reserve and also accelerate the recovery. You mentioned the divergence between the rest of the world and sub-Saharan Africa. So this support will help put the countries in the region back on the convergence path they were on before the pandemic. So we estimate that sub-Saharan Africa's low-income countries will face an additional external financing need of about $245 billion over the next 5 years. And this number increases to $425 billion for the region as a whole. To meet these financing needs, there will be a need for significant contribution from all potential sources, including from the international financial institutions, from development partners for more ODAs, official development assistance, and debt relief where needed. Capacity development also will help countries efficiently and effectively scale up their development spending. And where does the private sector fit in? And this is exactly where the private sector fit in, because despite the best effort from the local authorities and the international community, international financial institution, there will still be a large gap that will remain. And it is paramount that the private sector chips in, contributes to financing the development needs of these countries. And this will require, of course, reforms to promote this participation, private sector investment, including through reform to enhance the business environment and transparency and governance. So this is going to be the main focus of the Mobilizing with Africa event that will be held later in May in Paris.
Papa Njai, head of the African Department's Regional Studies Division at the IMF. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
NGI leads the team that produces the Regional Economic Outlook. There's much more in the report, also published in French. Check it out at imf.org. Vous pouvez également écouter ce podcast en français. Look for other IMF podcasts wherever you listen and follow us on Twitter at @IMF_podcast. I'm Bruce Edwards. Thanks for listening. Thank you.